Welcome to an end of special Elastic podcast. I'm Christopher Atkins, and I'm joined once more by the Elastica.com's Rio Coimbra. Hello, Rio.
Hello, Chris. How's it going?
I'm good, thank you. And in line with last year's end of season award special, we're once more joined by the BBC South American football correspondent, Tim Vickery. Hello, Tim.
Hello, lovely to be here.
Well, we're a global bunch again this week. You're down in Brazil. I'm in China. Rio's in the United States. So once more, we're showing Brazilian football is gradually getting more worldwide. So to start off then, guys, a couple of news items for this week before we move into the awards themselves. This weekend, then, the big talking point in Brazil has been the opening of the new Grêmio Arena in Porto Alegre. A 60,000-seater stadium. It looks magnificent in terms of new stadiums. They're not always the best lookers, but this one, in my opinion, is a fairly stunning design. We were just talking before we came on about the wave of new stadiums that are going to come into the Brazilian game in the next 18 months ahead of the World Cup. Tim, firstly, what effect do you think this stadium could have on Grêmio, who we've seen challenge near the top of the league this year? And in general, these new stadiums, do you think they're going to have a big impact on Brazilian football?
Well, I think one of the things which has come so clearly out of the last 2 years in the Brazilian Championship is the importance of a home. You know, Palmeiras haven't got one at the moment because they're doing up their stadium. They were relegated. There was no stadium available in Belo Horizonte last year, and Atletico and Cruzeiro both nearly went down. So having a home makes such a difference psychologically and also financially. And this is a dynamic which fascinates me, the new financial dynamic of Brazilian football, with new stadiums cropping up all over the country. There are worries, I think justified worries, about pricing supporters out of the market. What's this dynamic going to be between comfort and between atmosphere? Are we going to lose atmosphere in getting this comfort? And the atmosphere in the Olympico was special there for Grêmio. Will they be able to reproduce that atmosphere in the new arena? I'm told that they will. Pricing, is this going to mean more price rises? Brazilian football is already pricing people out of the market. That's one reason for the low attendance figures and average crowd figures in this Brazilian Championship of 13,000. But long term, one of the aspects that most fascinates me is the extent of investments going on in the northeast of Brazil, an area where they don't have too many problems filling the stadiums, but they do have problems competing at a national level. The big northeastern clubs are very seldom genuinely national players. Very seldom do they form really competitive teams. And I wonder if, you know, when we meet up in 10, 15 years' time, we'll see that these investments that are happening in northeastern football will enable these clubs to put themselves on new business footing, and they'll be able to build squads and retain squads that give them the possibility of competing with the Corinthians and so on. This, I think, is the most interesting dynamic in Brazilian football to follow over the next 15 years. What effect the new stadiums will have on the big clubs in the northeast?
Yeah, Tim, and I think one thing I'll sort of add on towards the end there is, and it's another topic we mentioned right before we started here, and you made a point that Brazil, there's a lot of news about crowds not showing up for the stadium and instead choosing to watch games at home and at bars, and then pay-per-view is becoming a very big business in Brazil for football matches. But I think it could also be interesting not only to see this dynamic of the new stadiums and just infrastructure-wise, but also how the crowd's changing these games in terms of, you know, a greater concerted effort on safety of the crowds and making sure that transportation to the stadiums is better. You know, I think sometimes some clubs and some fan bases are still known to be very aggressive when you go to the stadium, not necessarily a very family-friendly trip that you can take to some games across Brazil. So it'll be interesting that, you know, with this new infrastructure and sort of modern stadiums, does that also raise the level for security and for the family aspect of the game? And we've seen, you know, over the past decade, two decades in Europe, we've seen a large change in this. And hopefully we can see the same happen in Brazil as the years go by.
I don't know if both of you saw on that point, Rio. In the opening game of Grêmio's new stadium, they beat Hamburg 2-1 on Saturday evening. There was actually some fights broke out amongst the Grêmio fans, and a large section of the rest of the stadium started booing them for their actions. And it was quite interesting to see them turn on the kind of hardcore support behind the one goal who were breaking out into fights on this big opening day. They really turned against them. There was a lot of booing of their actions, and I wonder, Tim, you remember, of course, like I do, the change in British football after Hillsborough, after the introduction of all-seater stadium. There's been a very big shift in the type of person who now goes to football matches. There's a lot more, say, middle-class people, and there's a lot more family emphasis as well.
Yeah, and I think Brazil would be wrong to imitate in a slavish manner the English model, just because the demographic is so different. And I'm much more in favour of keeping admission prices down and then trying to make money selling drinks and food to the fans. Obviously, one thing which is very controversial here is the alcohol ban. The clubs are missing out on considerable revenue with the inability to sell beer inside the stadium. Now, right, that ban might exist for the best of motives, but what actually happens is that the fans will drink outside the stadium, so they're still drinking, and outside the stadium, not only are the clubs losing revenue, but it's also putting the fans in areas, sometimes outside the stadium, which are harder to police and harder to separate the fans. So that's something which I think needs to be looked at. If they follow the English route of keeping pushing admission prices up, I just don't think that's going to be sustainable long-term in Brazil because of the income differential. And we also have to weigh in the mentality of Brazilian supporters who don't have that same kind of follow their team through good and bad that the English supporter has. You know, there's a big difference here, I think, in that when it happened in England, English football was bouncing back from the really bad days post Hillsborough. The game rallied, and you know, there was a real feeling of supporters coming together to try and save the game. And then with the exploits of England in the 1990 World Cup, that created a new market for football and a new market for the Premier League that was launched 2 years later. So it meant that when English football was putting its prices up, it was doing so from a position of strength. Brazilian football at the moment is not in a position of strength. With average crowds of 13,000, it's not in a position of strength. So I do worry about the possibility of price rises excluding more from the stadium, because I just don't think that's the way to go. Far more practical in Brazil, keep admission prices down. All right, have your VIP seats, but keep major admission prices down. Make your money on drink and food.
We seem to be having a couple of technical issues there, so we'll move on to our end of season awards. We did this last year. People can still see the winners from those awards online. They're still on SambaFoot, so if you do feel like checking out, go and have a look. We'll take the same format. So we'll start once more with Young Player of the Year. Except this year, we're going to do it slightly differently. We're going to alter the settings on this award and change it to a kind of revelation or breakthrough of the year award, mainly to rule out the likes of Neymar, who are still under 21 but well past winning Young Player of the Year awards. So we don't have a shortlist as such. So what I'm going to do, chaps, I'm going to ask you both to name different players. I'll also name a player. And then once we've got three names, we'll pick our winner at the end of it. So starting with you, Tim, who would be your breakthrough of the year?
Well, I feel embarrassed about doing it first because I think there's one name that we'll all share. I think there's only one player who can win this award. So I'll come to him in a minute. And then I'll just throw out some other names of players who I think have had really, really good years and are names to watch. Just turned 18, centre-back for Botafogo, Doria. Class act. I took a Man City scout to watch him and he just couldn't believe it. I guarantee that Doria is in Man City's notebook. Had a wonderful, wonderful year at centre-back. I'm a big fan of Fregio, of Internacional, midfielder. Inter, for me, perhaps the biggest disappointment of the year, but Fregio, left-footed midfielder, quick to think, quick to execute functions, I think he was great. I quite like Ritelli of Sporci, in a similar kind of function. Bruno Mendes, just at the end of the season there with Botafogo, just late season, but all the stuff about the new Careca, and on what he showed at the end of the season is not totally wide of the mark. But the player I think has to win is Bernard of Atletico Mineiro. And perhaps the best thing to watch in the Brazilian Championship this year has been the combination between Ronaldinho and Bernard, because they've just complemented each other wonderfully well. Ronaldinho with the vision and the passing ability, and Bernard with the pace. But it's not only pace. And football pace is so often knowing when to slow down and when to accelerate. And those kind of decisions of the game, Bernard, I think, takes very, very well indeed. I think he's a real talent, and he, without doubt, is my revelation of the year. And I'd imagine, after three of us have all named candidates, that's the one that we'll pick out.
Rio, who are you going to add to the shortlist then?
Well, in terms of additions, I think maybe a couple others that deserve mention are probably more so and became bigger news because of the Libertadores, but also had a good run, an impressive run in the Brasileiro, and that's Romarinho from Corinthians, who has impressed me. I think at the age of 23, not necessarily a very young breakthrough revelation player, but Marcos Rocha, the right back, fullback for Atlético Mineiro. I think had a little bit of a dip in form towards the end of the season, but was immense for them in the first half to mid stretch of the championship. I think beyond those guys, maybe a few others that didn't necessarily play the full season, but young players to watch nonetheless, and we might very well be talking about them next season unless some European clubs pick them up. But the likes of Ademilson, the young striker for São Paulo. Marco Junior for Fluminense, and one that is actually on his way to Europe already or fairly soon would be Wallace, the right back for Fluminense, who played 15 or 20 games or something like that. And that's you know, maybe the list that I'll mention. But again, Tim's absolutely right, and for me, I think it's the list starts and ends sort of officially at Bernard, who had so good for Atlético, and I agree completely with Tim. Watching him with Ronaldinho was spectacular, and the amount that this player has grown in the past year, and not only that, but the consistency that he's had all season, I think is incredible. You know, it's in Brazil, it's not that infrequently that you see these young rising stars. You know, Wellington Nem last year and for a large part of this year has been great, but the consistency week in, week out that Bernat had, for, you know, title contending Atlético Mineiro, I think is a big testament to the talent that he has. And he's grown from not just being a pacey dribbler, sort of inverted winger, likes to cut inside and very technical, can take players on and has some amazing moves, but also the vision that he has. And I think he's a very intelligent player, very aggressive even for his small stature. I think must be many, many European clubs that are keeping an eye on him, and you know, the bids are probably going to start coming in January. They already started, I think, from a Ukrainian or Russian club in the past month, I think, but we should start seeing even more interest in him in January.
Well, I think this is all fairly straightforward then, because as Tim suggested right at the start, I think all three of us are going to go for Bernard on this one. Reiterate what Tim said about Doria. He was excellent for Botafogo, so I'm going to stick him on the shortlist from my end of things. And Rio, you mentioned Wallace, and at the start of the year, we also had the emergence of Marquinhos before he moved to Roma. Tim, this Brazil under-20 side who will line up in the South American Championship in January, when you add in Douglas, who had a great season at left-back for Náutico, that's quite a defence, and a very young defence, even at under-20 level.
Yeah, let's see what happens with them, because they're victims of the kind of turmoil at the CBF, aren't they? And I was disappointed, to be honest, that Ney Franco ducked out to go to become São Paulo coach. I know being São Paulo coach is a great thing to do, but I thought that function of being in control of Brazil's youth sides, I think in the long term that's so important, because if you look in recent years, Brazil's under-20 team hasn't been producing enough players on the conveyor belt through to the senior team. And so often they've gone with inexperienced coaches who are looking to make a name for themselves. And the shortcut to do that is pick big, strong players. But that's not the, you know, the aim of the under-20s is not to win titles. It's to develop players for the senior side. And I don't think that's been working consistently well enough. So now, without Ney Franco and with the confusion at the top with Mano being sacked, it'll be interesting to see how Brazil's under-20s get on next month.
Well, we have Bernard as our winner for Revelation of the Season, so that's the first award out the way then. So I think at this point we'll move on to Manager of the Year. We, again, no shortlist as such. Rio, do you want to chuck a name out there to start with?
Sure. I think maybe who I'll start with is Cuca for Atlético Mineiro. Who, I think when we were talking about stadiums earlier on, Tim made the quick point that last season, Atlético Mineiro were relegation candidates and had to fight at the very last bit of the season to stay up. And certainly a large part of that was the fact that they didn't really have a home, and games at home weren't as important to them as it could have been had they had a big crowd support. But even with that said, you know, I think it's a testament to the work that Cuca has done there to raise this team who were well ahead of everybody else early on in the season and did fall a little bit from pace as Fluminense came in. But with Ronaldinho coming in, with Bernard emerging, the partnership of Hever and Leonardo Silva at the back, Marcos Rocha at right back. I think this has been a very good squad, very well organized squad, and have had such an impressive season. And to have that sort of turnaround from last season to this season, I think has been very impressive.
Tim, your nomination for Manager of the Year?
Cuca is a great candidate, and he so often, so consistently produces attractive sides. I think there are a few others. Ney Franco had a spectacular second half of the year with São Paulo. They were the best team in terms of points in the second half of the year. Cristóvão Borges at Vasco, I think, did extraordinarily well with a fairly limited lineup, especially after they started selling their players and getting in financial problems. And I think perhaps the value of Cristóvão Borges was only appreciated after he'd gone. Alexandre Galo, I think, is one for the future. A very, very bright young coach. He's done an excellent job with Náutico. But it's difficult to look past Abel Braga for the convincing way in which Fluminense won the championship. He's a fascinating character, Abel. You know, in his playing days, he was from the kick anything that moves school of centre backs. He was a hard man centre back, and he's a hard man centre back who loves his classical music. And I think you see some of the contradictions of Abel in his team, because his Fluminense side, if you look at the team lineup, it's very attacking and very, very open. But if you look at the numbers, excellent defensive record. So I think for managing to be so consistent over the year and to win the title with three rounds to go, I think it has to be Abel Braga for me.
Well, Abel Braga was going to be my choice. So Abel Braga is the Samba Foot Manager of the Year. I'll stick Alexandre Galo down on the shortlist as my candidate, as Náutico well exceeded expectations this season, so he did a fantastic job up there in Recife. So that's Abel Braga also on the award list for this year. So and we're rattling through them. On to Team of the Year before we finish with the big prize of Player of the Season. So basically, Tim and Rio, we've got a shortlist together based on the CBF Team of the Year and also on Global's player ratings for the season. So hopefully we've got a fair representation. So to start with Goalkeeper of the Year, and I think this is going to be fairly unanimous. The three players we've got on the list are Fluminense's Diego Cavalieri, Sao Paulo's Rogério Ceni, and Botafogo's Jefferson. And I'm going to jump in on this one, as it seems fairly obvious. Diego Cavalieri is my vote. Any objections from either of you?
I don't have any objections, but I'm sceptical about the bandwagon of Diego Cavalieri for the national team. Because what he is, I think, is a line goalkeeper. He doesn't command his area. I think he was a little bit fortunate this year in that he was playing behind, to me, and this is something we'll get onto in a minute, the centre-back of the year, Gomes, who I think had an exceptional campaign and swept up everything. I think this was a problem with Diego Cavalieri when he went to Liverpool. And he had one or two just disastrous displays because, you know, the defensive line's much, much higher. He's asked to come out and take responsibility 30 metres from goal and he couldn't do it. And so that worries me in terms of Brazil's goalkeeper for 2014. The fact that he's not a goalkeeper who commands his area. He's very much a line goalkeeper. But he did it very well this year and he made decisive saves at important moments. So I think the vote has to go with him.
Rio?
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a wonderful point that Tim breaks up on the attitude towards Diego Cavalieri. But, you know, in terms of shot-stopping ability and reflexes, he, as Tim said, pulled off some phenomenal saves during the course of the season, sort of single-handedly kept Fluminense in some games, especially in that sort of two-thirds of the way through the season and the point where Fluminense were on top of the table, but just ahead of Atlético Mineiro. They weren't playing that well, but they were still managing to get 3 points in these games. A lot of times you saw Fluminense sort of hold on to and not concede, even though they were playing not great football, and that was largely due sometimes to Diego Cavalieri saves. And then in the second half, you would see Fred pop in with a goal, and they managed to win 1-0 and get those 3 points. So certainly there were some big games, big moments. You know, I think a lot of credit is due to the likes of Jefferson at Botafogo, Senna at São Paulo, as you said, Chris. I think Marcelo Grohe at Grêmio also deserves a shout. I've always liked Rafael from Santos as a young keeper and certainly has a big future. Fernando Praz at Vasco. So I think there have been a lot of very good keepers this season and an impressive list to pick from. But in terms of importance to their squad and importance in the season and big saves, it has to be Diego Cavalieri.
Moving on then to we'll go to right fullback. The CBF picked Marcos Rocha as their right fullback. Global has Sports Cicinho and also Coritiba's Ayrton on their list of top performing players this year. So, Tim, a choice of those three, or you can tuck in anyone you feel like adding?
I think this is, if not the most difficult position to select, it's certainly one of them. And Marcos Rocha, he had a sensational campaign, but he doesn't defend. And that was a problem, I think, for Atletico. Cicinho as well. And the two that I'd written down were Marcos Rocha and Cicinho. But both of them are in the same category. And Cicinho is much more of an auxiliary striker than he is a genuine fullback in the European conception of a fullback. Bruno of Fluminense, I think, had a pretty good year as well. And Fluminense are a team who the outball is usually the fullbacks. And I remember a fascinating game against Curitiba when just in the last few minutes, Curitiba chasing their game, they brought on an extra centre-back. The reason being they wanted to push their wing-backs right up. They went to a back three in order to push their wing-backs right up. And it strangled Fluminense because Fluminense's outball is the fullbacks, is Bruno and Carlinhos. And without that outball, But Curitiba were able to pin Fluminense right back, and that was something which emphasised the importance of Bruno, although he's been criticised by the supporters this year. Lucas of Botafogo, although maybe he was a little bit better last year. So I don't see any one candidate jumping up and down and saying, I am without doubt the fullback of the year. I suppose for his attacking contribution, Marcus Rocha was the most outstanding, but I didn't see one genuine, all-round, 100% quality right-back in the entire tournament.
Well, it's interesting because when just before the show, me and Rio were talking about fullbacks, and it really hasn't been a stellar year for either flank in terms of the left-backs haven't stood out, and the Brazilian league every year loses a lot of players, and the likes of the other Cicinho went to Sevilla, Fagner, who's moved to the Bundesliga, and now they're big losses in terms of talent of fullback. Well, Rio, I'll come to you then, as I've already worked out my deciding vote. Who would you go for at right back?
Well, I think I would echo a lot of what Tim said and your comments about it's sort of an underwhelming year in a lot of ways for especially for Brazil with such historic fullbacks in the past. I think I'll be slightly different and I'll actually pick Cicinho from Sporting as my vote. And I say that not even so much because I necessarily think he had a much better season than Marcos Rocha. I think maybe he was slightly more consistent throughout the year, but to me, Cicinho is just a nice story because, you know, this is the player that has a background in the Brazil national team, had a very successful spell at Atlético Mineiro and then São Paulo before moving on to Real Madrid and then played at Roma in Italy for a little while and was a very good player for a little stretch there. But then sort of notably had some issues with alcohol and then his professionalism was questioned and his career just took a turn for the worse. But then this year has sort of seen his reemergence. You know, he arrived at Sporting with sort of very, very humbly and telling the story that he admits he's made a lot of stupid mistakes in his career and that at the age of 32, you know, he doesn't have too much left and he's going to turn things around. And he was very important for Sporting, even though they were unfortunately relegated. So I'll be interested to see if he sticks around there or if somebody picks him up for next season in Serie A. But to me, the story behind the scenes has been a nice one. And so because of that and that sentimental aspect of it, I vote for him.
Well, I've already decided before your very convincing arguments are real, but I'm going to stick with Marcos Rocha as my vote. So at the moment, we're sticking along with the CBF's choice, which is interesting to see. I don't think we were very close to it last year. Moving on to the left back then, this last year was actually won by Juninho, who stayed in the league. Cortez was another candidate, and Thiago Feltri, all who are still in Brazil, none of who, until maybe Cortez at the end of the year, have had particularly good 2012s. The CBF nominated Carlinhos from Fluminense. Globo's top two performers are João Paulo of Ponte Preta and Marcelo Cordeiro of Portuguesa. I'm going to add in Marcio Azevedo, who replaced Cortez at Botafogo, into the shortlist. So in terms of my vote, I'm going to stick with Carlinhos of Fluminense. I think, as Tim said, the fullbacks are generally the out ball at Fluminense, and he's been a very consistent performer over the course of the 12 months. Rio, you can have second vote on this one.
I think I would vote for Carlinhos as well. To be honest, I've been very underwhelmed again with not only the fullbacks in general this year, but especially the left back position. You know, it's probably between Fabio Santos and Carlinhos for me. But I think, Chris, you're the one that said when we were discussing this position earlier, you know what you're going to get with those players. And you know, they're consistent and you know, they make a few mistakes. They're decently effective going forward and provide some support. I think Fabio Santos can have the odd mistake and sometimes struggles against more technical players in one-on-one situations. But I think he's important tactically for Corinthians and is just a smart player in terms of positioning and fits well into that system Chichi has. And again, Corinthians for that his importance in the Fluminense system as well. So. Probably purely because Fluminense were the champions, I cast my vote for Carlinhos.
Well, we have a winner then, Tim. Just out of interest, who would be your left back choice?
I was going to go vote for Fabio Santos for exactly the reasons that Rio gave, but nothing wrong with Carlinhos as a winner. But I'll register my vote for Fabio Santos just so he gets on the board.
Excellent. So Fabio Santos is also on the short list. Moving on to centre-back then, Tim. This is an area you brought up just now when we were discussing goalkeepers. So the CBFA's choice was Atletico's duo of Heva and Leonardo Silva. You brought up Kum from Fluminense. And then Global has as their two top performers Enrique of relegated Palmeiras and also Gilberto Silva of Grêmio. So as you brought it up then, Tim, I'll come to you first on this one.
Well, I disagree with almost everything that's been said about this. I don't actually think that the Atletico centre-backs were a strong point of the side. And I don't understand the fascination that Manuel Menezes has with Heather. For me, he's not quite there. I think he's a little bit too clumsy. Gum, for me, was just far and away the best centre-back in the tournament. All right, he's not particularly classical. You can't give him too much responsibility passing the ball out of defence. He doesn't do that particularly well. But he's quick. And there's not a lot of... And both Leonardo Silva and Heather, I don't think either of them are the quickest. And Gum is quick, and he also just cleans up in the air. I thought, but by head and shoulders, he was the best centre-back in the tournament. And the second best for me was the fellow who, for my mind, I think it was an extraordinary lapse which cost Brazil the Olympics. And that's Rafael Toloi of São Paulo, who joined in mid-season and really tightened up defence. São Paulo had the best defence in the Brazilian Championship in the second part of the season. I think Rafael Toloi had a lot to do with that. And had only he gone to the Olympics in place of Juan, I think the outcome would have been different. There wouldn't have been the perceived need to play two left backs to try and shore up that left side of the defence. You could have shifted Thiago Silva across. Thiago Silva is happy on both sides, can play either side without any problems. He played the left side in the Copa America last year, and Toloi would come in his natural right side. Toloi's quicker than the Atletico pair. He's combative. And for me, those are the best two centre backs in the tournament: Gum of Fluminense and Rafael Toloi of São Paulo.
Rafael Toloi is a really interesting one, actually, now you bring him up. A bit like Gum in a way. He's a player who's often, I feel, unfairly criticised over mistakes when maybe he'll put in 10, 15 excellent performances in a row and then there's one error and the press seem to like to jump on him, which is interesting because I don't see the same with some other centre-backs in the league who do make mistakes and seem to maybe get away with it more. Last year, then, our centre-back choices were Dede and Emerson. Dede struggled with injury this year. Emerson hasn't repeated the feats at Curitiba that he did in 2011. In terms of centre-backs, then, I'm going to go with Leonardo Silva of Atletico and also with Gum. So those are my two votes on this one. Rio, over to you then.
Well, I think we're going to have a diverse amount of picks here. I'll come up in the defense of Heve, who I think is quite good. I agree with Tim that I think he is a little overrated, and I don't think he's of the quality of the Brazil national team. He's nowhere near the status level of players like Thiago Silva, and I think even Dede, if it weren't for the fact that he did struggle with injury this year, I think is a much better player. But I do think that Heve was very important for Atletico. I think he's strong in the air. I think he's good with his feet. He is capable of the occasional mistake, but I think he's just an intelligent player who reads the game well and sort of is important as a leader back there for Atletico and marshals that defense well. I think, so he's one of my votes, and my other vote is probably in a more an unusual one, and he was in the short list that you mentioned, Chris, but I was actually surprised that he was there, and that's Gilberto Silva for Grêmio. And I vote for him not even necessarily because I think he was in those top two center backs of the year, but just the fact that, you know, for the most of his career he's been a defensive midfielder, more of an experienced guy, you know, the former Arsenal player, of course, who came into Grêmio and most assumed that he was going to be in a Volante position, and Lucien Bougou put him at the back. And to me, he's been tremendously effective and just such an intelligent player. And the experience that he brings into that side and the ability that he has, I think, is astounding. He just brings such a calming presence to the back. And, you know, we haven't spoken too much of this Grêmio side in this podcast or even throughout the year, which is a big shame because I think the work that Lucien Bougou did there and the work that the squad did there was very impressive. So for me, I'll do Heaven and Gilberto Silva.
Well, this puts us in an interesting situation, but if you're both happy, I was torn between Heather and Leonardo Silva, so I'm quite happy to put Heather and Gorm as my two choices, if that makes it easier. Are we all happy with that selection?
That'll do.
Excellent. So moving on quickly then to the Volante positions, we need two in this section. So from the initial shortlist we have, the CBF picked Corinthians Paulinho and Fluminense's Jean. We also have Souza and Marcos Assuncao. That's Souza of Grêmio from Global's selection. So Rio, Volantes, you can pick anyone who's caught your eye in that position this year.
Well, I think this might be another one where there's at least one obvious choice, and that's Paulinho from Corinthians, who, you know, in a lot of ways has become sort of the key player that people know from this Corinthians side, maybe only because the Corinthians side doesn't really have that many sort of individual stars. But Paulinho has, of course, you know, played a very important role for Corinthians, pops in with important goals. You know, he doesn't score that much, but he always seems to come up at the right times in the right places. Intelligent player overall, very important as to break up play, but also to link defense to midfield, important in those counter-attacking situations for Corinthians, and just likes to get forward on occasion, but at the same time is intelligent enough to be, for the most part, sort of aware of where he should be and can fluctuate between going forward and staying back when appropriate. So to me, Paulinho is one obvious choice. I think, you know, some other names I'll mention, you know, even Souza and Náutico as well. You know, not only the Souza from Grêmio, but I think also Souza from Náutico had a good year. Jean at Fluminense, of course. I think Guinazu for Internacional, I've always felt he's a little underrated, and I've always enjoyed his football. Arouca Santos has also been good. But I think my other vote would go to Marcos Assuncao for relegated Palmeiras, who I've always been a very big fan of his. I think, again, he's in what I said about Paulinho, that he's important both defensively and going forward. His set pieces alone are incredibly valuable. I think he was their best player in their Copa do Brasil win, and even in the Brasileiro was so important. And when he was out injured, I think the team clearly felt that and were worse off for it. So those would be my two votes.
Tim, you can have next vote on Volantes.
I've always been a huge fan of Marcos Assuncao. I was disappointed that he didn't go to the 2002 World Cup. I think he just would have given the Brazilian midfield something a little bit extra. But defensively, I think that was his problem. At the top level, defensively, he struggled a little bit. I think we're all going to go with Paulinho, an exceptional player. Very much a kind of almost like a traditional British-style central midfielder, you know, from your Brian Robsons and David Platts and more recently Frank Lampard. Wouldn't it be interesting if he steps into Frank Lampard's shoes in Chelsea? Does a bit of everything and times the run so well to get into the box and score. But despite my admiration for Marcos Assuncao, I'm going to line up with the CBF and go with Jean alongside Paulinho, because I think Jean was an absolute crucial player for Fluminense this year. And if you look at the Fluminense side, especially when Deco was playing, it's very open defensively. You know, you've got a centre-forward, Fred, you've got a winger there, Wellington Neng. You've got Thiago Neves floating around, who, all right, he'll get back behind the line of the ball, but he's not really the greatest defensive presence. You've got Dekel, who is there to provide clarity, but he's mid-30s and doesn't do a lot of chasing around. There's an awful lot of space to be filled there. And the one who was filling that space, I think, was Jan, who has exceptional lung power and was linking defence with attack. I think he was absolutely crucial. He was the player, right? You've got Egino almost at times as a third centre-back, dropping back. So that space there between the lines, it's Jan who was filling. And he was the balancing point of Fluminense. So for me, it's Paulinho and Jean in the centre of midfield.
Well, I probably would have agreed with the CBF as well, but as Paulinho's in the team, I'm going to get someone else onto the shortlist. I'm going to go with Jean as well, who I think was somewhat underappreciated at Sao Paulo, where he often played in a right-back position with Juan on the other flank, who didn't have a great season at Santos this year. So I'll agree on that one. And then I'm going to put forward Wellington, who Rio will know is a big favourite of mine. I really like what I see from him. I thought he was great before he got injured at the start of the year. Last season he was very strong. He was on our shortlist then. And I think the difference he's made to that Sao Paulo team, as well as Nate Franco's tactical changes, but since Wellington came back from injury, they've been a completely different side. And Danielson could also be a possible contender for the shortlist. So we have a clear winner there. We're in line with the CBF on Valanci. So moving on then to the attacking midfielders. This is where Brazil places a lot of emphasis on, so there's undoubtedly a big selection to choose from. So starting off with the CBFA's choice, we have Ronaldinho and Lucas Moura of Sao Paulo, and of course Ronaldinho of Atletico. And then Globo's two highest rated other players are Botafogo's Clarence Seedorf and also Gremio's Zé Roberto. So two veterans, or if you count Ronaldinho, three veterans in the contention for this award, as well as Lucas. So I'll come to you first, Tim, on this one.
This is very difficult because a lot depends here on how we're going to form our team. If we're going to go with two there, and almost the only team, or one of the very, very few teams which has been playing that kind of traditional Brazilian 4-4-2, you know, the twos everywhere, the 4-2-2-2. Gremio are more or less the only team who've been doing it. Almost everyone else has embarked on 4-2-3-1. It's very interesting to see that almost no one has played three centre-backs this year. And even Portuguesa with Jorginho, who's a specialist in three centre-backs, he started off that way and he abandoned it and he got him clear of relegation with a back four. But almost everyone has gone with 4-2-3-1. So part of our problem here is a conceptual problem of who we consider an attacking midfielder and who we consider a support striker, I suppose.
Cutting in at this point, if we want to go for a 4-2-3-1 to maybe represent the league better, in terms of the strikers we got on the list, we can certainly add Neymar and Wellington Neymar into that category. So we'll make that call now if everyone's happy with it, and we'll add those two to the shortlist and go for a 4-2-3-1 as our setup.
Well, for me, the three pick themselves, despite the strong competition from Seedorf, from Zé Roberto. Lucas Moura, for me, is more potential than reality so far. But for me, the line of three is Neymar, Jorginho, and Bernat. I can't believe that. Are we going to get any argument about that? Because surely these three players. All right, you might argue that Neymar hasn't really played the Brazilian Championship because he was more of a CBF player. And he never played with the pressure really on. There were once or twice he was playing with Santos in danger of being sucked into the relegation zone. But all right, leaving that to one side, when he did play, his form was championship winning. Had Santos had him for the full year, then Santos would have been right up challenging for the title. And Ronaldinho and Bernardo, as we've agreed earlier on, were probably the best thing about the championship, watching them together. So for me, that line of three and I think here Neymar and Ben can swap over wings quite happily with Ronaldinho central. I think that was interesting this year, because for so long reduced to that left side of the field, as he was with Barcelona and Milan and with Flamengo as well, and bringing him that little bit more central just opened up the field for the passing skills of Ronaldinho. It just gave him options both sides of him, and that brought the best out of him. So for me, that line of three there is Ronaldinho flanked by Neymar and Bernard.
To be honest, I've got no objections with anything Tim's just said. Neymar might not have played that often. I think it was 17 games. The website's telling me here 17 games, 14 goals, 7 assists. Between Ronaldinho and Bernard, you had another 23 assists to that unit, and a fair number of goals on top of it. So I'm quite happy to go with those three, even if Bernard is somewhat neglected by the CBF and Globo's player rating system.
Yeah, I'm on the same boat as you guys, and that's sort of my clear vote as well. You know, I think maybe 6 months ago I might have said Wellington Neng ahead of Bernard, just because I sort of, and I mentioned this earlier, I sort of assumed that Bernard would dip in form and not be able to sustain his fantastic start to the season. But if anything, I think he got even stronger as the season went on. Wellington Neng, I think, was impressive, but to me, Bernard is the bigger talent, has more vision, is more technical, and is just overall the more impressive player. I think I would like to mention the loss of Juninho Pernambucano and Vasco, who I thought had a tremendous year. I think certainly Seedorf, Chris, I mentioned him to you a whole bunch of times during the course of the season, just how impressed I had been with him. I've always been a big fan of Zé Roberto. I think Deco had a fantastic first half of the season, struggled a little bit with some injuries, and when he came back, he wasn't playing at quite the same level as he was before. Still important for Fluminense, but that dip in form probably rules him out of the side. But yeah, I think a three attack-minded midfield of Neymar, Ronaldinho Gaúcho, and Bernard is incredible, and one that any side in the world would be afraid to play against.
Now, my one disappointment with Wellington Neng this year is that he hasn't scored enough goals, I don't think. And he scored more last year with Figueirense than he scored this year for Fluminense. That just disappoints me a little bit, although in general I think he's a really, really promising player. Sometimes I prefer to see him on the left. You know, you see him sometimes cutting in from the right, cutting in towards the defenders, where I'd like to see him swap over at times as well and have more down the left. And perhaps he might have more goal-scoring opportunities that way.
Well, another unanimous choice then, varying slightly from the official award. So we'll move on to strikers. And the two I had down on the original list are Fred and Luis Fabiano, who were obviously competing for the scorer award for a lot of the season. I'm going to add in off the top of my head Chiesa from Náutico, and also I'm going to add in Bruno Mineiro from Portuguesa. So for me, for our one spot, it has to be Fred from Fluminense. That's going to be my vote. He was crucial in them winning the league. He might not have as good a goal-scoring goals per game ratio as possibly Neymar or Luis Fabiano, but I think his goals were much more important in the course of the season. So I'm going to go with Fred. And Rio, if you want to cast a second vote.
Yeah, to me the choice is clear for Fred as well. I think it would have been between him and Luis Fabiano, but purely because Fluminense were champions and Fred was responsible for so many of the goals that side had. You know, 20 goals in the league, over 30 goals in the season. Last year, you know, he also had over 30 goals during the season, also over 20 goals in the league. He probably would have reached those numbers in the previous 2 years as well if it weren't for some injuries. So he's been so consistent for Fluminense in the past 4 seasons, ever since he came back to Brazil from France. And, yeah, his goals have been so very important. And you know, he's the type of player that if he's in the box and you get the ball over to him, you just believe that he'll do something with it. He won't necessarily create a lot of chances himself, although he certainly does that through his physicality. But, you know, with the likes of Wellington Ney, Thiago Neves, Deku, and Wagner at times providing for him in the box, he's so lethal in the box with his head, with his finishing. And to me, yeah, very impressive and fully deserving of the craque do Brasileiro award that he won as well.
Tim?
Yeah, just some other names to throw in. Barcos, who under pressure, I thought had a sensational year with Palmeiras. Without him, they'd have been relegated almost before the championship had started. You know, he kept them alive. One who I thought was really interesting, and it could be fascinating to see what happens with him next year, is Aloísio of Figueirense, who formed an interesting little combination for a while there with Caio from Botafogo. But Aloísio, very tricky, and scores goals as well. I'll be fascinated to see what happens with him next year. Just at the end of the season, as we mentioned earlier on, Bruno Mendes with Botafogo just looked the genuine article, looked like he'd been doing it all his life. Leandro Damião was away a long time on international duty, but scored his goals for Internacional, and is a quality act, I think, as a centre-forward. But this year, yeah, it's been the year of Fregi, hasn't it? And he's the captain of the side, the inspiration of the side, and the point that you've both made, he scored the big goals at big moments. And so I don't think there's any disagreement. Fregi is our centre-forward.
All right, so onto the big one then, the Player of the Brasileiro Award. I think we've spoken in fairly detailed ways about all the players who are going to be possibly considered for this, so I'll just get a name from each of you. So if someone says the person you will eventually vote for, chuck out a different name to me. So Tim, give us a candidate.
Fred, Fluminense.
Rio.
Luis Fabiano, São Paulo, even though he just lost to Fred.
That's interesting, because I assumed you were going to pick either Ronaldinho or Bernard, so I'm going to stick with my choice of Bernard, which means Ronaldinho, if we're happy, will be a fourth member of the shortlist that I think probably deserves to be on there.
It's fine by us.
Excellent. Yeah. So we've got our four candidates. As I said, my vote is for Bernard this year. Even though he won our breakthrough award, I've been impressed with him all season. As Rio pointed out earlier, remarkably consistent for a player of his age, and at times really carried Atletico when they were out of form, and maybe when Ronaldinho wasn't quite at the standards he had been for the rest of the season. So that struck me as remarkable for a player who has relatively little experience. He certainly has no continental experience, so I'm going to go with Bernard on that front. Tim, I'll come to you, and then I'll give Mr. Elastico himself the deciding vote. So, Tim?
Well, I think Fregi was the... It's impossible to imagine Fluminense winning this championship without him. Even in his absences, Samuel came in and maintained the same level, and Samuel was one of the little bonuses, I think, that Fluminense had in this competition. But Fergie was the captain. He was the inspiration of the side that wrapped up the title with three games still to go. And I think it was so appropriate that it was his late goal against Palmeiras that did it. He's such a technically gifted player. The problem with him in the past, I think, has been, does he really want it? Does he really want to make the sacrifices necessary to get the best out of his talents? And this year, I think he did knuckle down. And the result is there for all to see. Fluminense well clear at the top of the championship, and I don't think it would have happened without him.
Rio, then, unless you want to add another name, and we'll have to come up with another way of deciding it, you've got Bernard or Fred for your choice.
Yeah, to me, it has to be Fred. I think, you know, I just spoke about his consistency, and we've all mentioned the important goals that he scored. The one last thing I'll add in his favor, if any further argument needs to be made, is that, you know, to me, what embodied this Fluminense side was their resilience and their competitive nature and their sort of never give up, never lay over and die attitude. And I mentioned earlier, even in stretches of the season when they weren't playing so well, they got stuck in and they held on and then they popped in with the goal towards the end of the game. And then more often than not, Fredi was the one with that goal. But I think even more importantly, he just represented this fighting spirit of this team. And it was a great spirit. It really was. You know, you see these sides through the years that are just extremely competitive and just tough to beat. When you're going out there against them, you just know that you're going to have a very tough game and you're going to need to try really hard to beat them. And I think to me, Fredi, more so than any other player in the Fluminense side, and embodied that attitude and that fighting spirit. And I think Tim was very eloquent with his statement there that I just can't see Fluminense having won this title without Fredi leading them. So to me, it's an obvious choice for Fredi.
Without bringing up a whole new topic entirely right at the end of the show, it's a real shame for me. This is probably my biggest regret in terms of looking in on the situation in Brazil, is that Fluminense's title, it doesn't have an asterisk next to it in terms of they were by far the best team of the league campaign, but you still get Corinthians fans who are determined to claim that they would have won the league if they were focusing. And I think, I know, Tim, it's a subject you've written and spoke upon on many occasions. This situation with the calendar does leave the whole thing open to that kind of debate.
You know, I spoke recently to Paul Breitner, who was over visiting in the SoccerX trade fair. And that's such an interesting conversation because Paul Breitner is not a diplomat. He said, you know, Brazil hasn't progressed in 20 years. He's not talking about the country, he's talking about the football. He's saying that they think the same way that they did 20 years ago. They're staring at their own belly button while the rest of the world is moving and progressing. And that's the kind of thinking that brings empires down. And the calendar is something that we come back to again and again and again. And the impediment is so clear. It's the state championships, which are the hijacking of Brazilian football by the oligarchy. It's full of the living dead, full of zombies from the time of the dictatorship, one of whom is now the president of Brazil's FA. And it's that which is distorting the calendar. It's the presence of the state championships which is distorting the calendar. And Brazil is a country riven with contradictions. And one of the big contradictions is that Brazilian football now, it has so many professional people working in it, in a context which, because of the state championships, is still half amateur. And if Brazilian football is going to fulfil its potential, if in 10 years' time Corinthians are going to be able to compete on a totally even but equal basis with Barcelona, it's going to the calendar will have to change. There's going to be there must be a rebellion, I think, from the clubs. And English football had its 1992 moment when the big clubs broke clear of a structure that wasn't in their best interests. How long are Brazil's big clubs, how long will they be content to exist in a structure where their own interests are damaged by the political needs of those who currently control the Brazilian game? How long is this situation going to go on for?
Well, it's certainly a topic that we've discussed on the show. I'm sure we'll discuss it again next year when the state championships all kick off again. But until then, Tim, you've got a bit of a break from South American leagues for a while now, so enjoy your holidays for a couple of weeks.
Cheers. Look forward. And then we've got the South American Under-20 Championships, which is about two games a day. So, you know, it's a labour of love.
Certainly, we've discussed how that's coming up in January. And also, my personal favourite, the Copa São Paulo, which I'll certainly be paying attention to again. Thanks very much for coming on. It's been a pleasure, Tim.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Same to you, Ria. Thanks for coming on once again. And good luck for Chelsea in the Club World Cup. So that's it for the Brazil Arau 2012. And we'll be back again next week with a bit of Corinthians and Chelsea for you. Thanks for listening.